Welcome to the Crossroads Podcast, where I discover decision-making that creates success.
Today, our guest is Charles Mosley, founder and former CEO of Norrell Mosley. This is a venture capital firm based out of Atlanta, Georgia, that invests primarily in healthcare and tech companies. Now, he has retired, splitting time between Atlanta and Lake Burton. I chose to have Mr. Mosley on the podcast because not only is he my grandfather, but he is also the embodiment of hard work, having created a life for himself coming from very little means. In talking to and spending time with him throughout the years, I have learned so many lessons, bringing me to the podcast where I thought he would be a perfect fit. Welcome to the Crossroads Podcast. It's so lovely having you as a guest.
Thank you very much.
I'm just going to jump right into it. I have a few questions I'm going to ask you. So can you tell us about your childhood, like where you grew up, and if there were any pivotal moments in your younger years that led to your career now?
Well, I grew up in a small town in Georgia named Monroe, which is at the time was about 5,000 people, which is about the size of one little spot of Mill Valley, went to the public high school in Monroe, grew up in a neighborhood where everybody rode bicycles to school and walked to school and did this and that. And it was a great way to be a kid. That led to high school, which was in the same town, same public school, only one school. And sports were a big deal to me. And I played football and some basketball, but mainly football. And one of the primary events that happened to me in high school was not a very happy event, unfortunately. I got hurt in the middle of my junior year in high school playing football and was unable to ever play again because I had a head injury, and the doctors just said, "You're not going to play any more football." And this was back before they were more cautious than NFL and college is. If you had a head injury, that was it. You weren't going to play anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that ended my football career, which was a traumatic event for me because it was very important in my life. But I was a little rebellious for a little while just because I was unhappy, but yes. I got over that and then graduated the next year, my senior year.
Yeah.
And I went to Georgia Tech, which was a big decision in my life, a big positive for me in my life, because it introduced me to a world that I was very unfamiliar with, being from that small town. And that led to friends and a career that started back at Georgia Tech.
Yeah. Can you tell us how you decided to go to Georgia Tech over like Georgia or another school in your state?
Well, the only places that I really never considered anything but Georgia Tech. I was just always a fan of Georgia Tech. I knew it to be a really good school, and it was affordable because it was a public school. And the other schools around there would really have only been Emory, which is a good school, but very expensive school. And we just couldn't afford to do that. So I never applied to anywhere but Georgia Tech and went there. Mm-hmm.
And then can you tell us about your experience at Georgia Tech, and would you change anything about it?
Well, I'll tell you, it's a funny experience in that the first quarter that I came from this small high school, and I was a good student in the small high school, but I also never really did any work. I could get by without it because it wasn't that hard a school. And so when I went to Tech, I tried to do the same little amount of work that I did in high school and get the same results, which were good grades. Unfortunately, it didn't work that way at Tech. So the first quarter, I almost flunked out of school because my grades were so poor. And I didn't, the only reason I didn't flunk out of school is you had to have two bad quarters in a row to flunk out. So I only had one. But with that experience, I remember going home for Christmas, and my grades came, and at that time, the grades were sent to the parents. I don't know that mm-hmm. they do that today, but since they're paying the bill, it seems appropriate that the parents would find out how you're doing.
Yeah.
And I found my grades were really bad. And so I remember my father kind of looked at him and just went sort of, well, I guess we'll find out soon if you're going to be able to go to college, or are you going to have to come back to Monroe and go to work somewhere? So I went, my eyes, I'm sure, got as big as half dollars. And I went back to school and really, really did much, did very well. And one of the reasons, of course, that second quarter was that I was taking a few things over same classes. So I learned very fast, though, that it was a different deal at Tech than it was at Monroe High School, mm-hmm. and that I needed to bear down and do the work and learn things, which I did, and wound up after that first quarter having good grades the rest of the time.
Yeah. And then can you tell us how you ended up at Harvard Business School after?
Yes, it was all related to that same world that I was in. Mm-hmm. My fraternity at Georgia Tech, we had kind of uniquely a number of people who were a year or two or three older than me, who I knew a bit, who had gone on to Harvard Business School. Mm-hmm. And I remembered talking to them about, well, why did you do that? And how did you get in? And what was the, what on and on. And as a result of that and the fraternity connection with my friends, with those friends, I decided to try to go to Harvard Business School. And the first time I applied, I was told to, sort of put on a waiting list, if you will, mm-hmm. to come back and try it again the next year. Now, at the time, and I maybe even still, most of the people who get in have work experience. They don't really want you straight out of college.
Yeah.
So I went to work for the Federal Reserve Bank in Atlanta. And that was how I got there.
Mm-hmm. After Harvard Business School, how did you make it back to Atlanta, and what was it like getting into the business world?
Okay, completely sort of happenstance, coincidence. Between my 2 years at Harvard, I worked in Atlanta for the Federal Reserve Bank, as I had done for a year before I went up there. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to come back to Atlanta because it was my home. It was a big growing city. And I thought, well, why would I want to go to New York when I can go to Atlanta? Well, that was maybe a little short-sighted because the financial world is New York, but mm-hmm. That was what I wanted to do. So I came back in the summer between my two years, and a classmate of mine invited me to go to a Braves baseball game. And you're going to say, what does that have to do with anything? Well, at the ball game that I went to was one other particular guy who was a friend of his that I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And he worked for, in fact, was a descendant of the founder of the company for a local Southeastern-based investment banking company named Robinson Humphrey. Mm-hmm. And his name was Roby Robinson. And he... So I went to this baseball game, and he was asking, well, what are you doing? And where are you going? And I said, well, I'd like to come back to Atlanta and go to work. And he said, well, send me a resume when you get to that point, and maybe you'd like to come down and interview us. Well, that led to a job there, and I was there for the next 15 years. Mm-hmm. And if I had not gone to the Braves baseball game, I'm certain I would not have gone to work for them because I didn't know anything about them.
Yeah.
And so I guess the lesson part of that is you never know what's going to turn out. You can plan and you can think you've charted out your life for the next few years or whatever. And all of a sudden, along comes something else that you're interested in. And my encouragement would be, don't close your mind to any of that. You just don't know what lies ahead.
Yeah. And then how did you meet your business partner and eventually move into Nora Mosley?
Well, that's another coincidence. I had been at Robinson Humphrey for 15 years. And by that time, I was managing the corporate finance department, which was the investment banking end of that company. Doing public offerings and mergers and valuations of business and that kind of work, which is now commonplace, but at that time was fairly unusual, especially in Atlanta. But I was selling a business where we were trying to get somebody to buy it, and it was a really good company, but we couldn't find anybody that was interested. But I finally found a German company that I thought was interested in buying it. But on the day that they were supposed to come and visit and negotiate, they called the day before and said, we're just not going to be able to come. I can't get everybody on the same page. We're not going to be able to do this. So I was a little down after having tried to sell it to 50 or 60 people. Yeah. And therefore, I had nothing to do that day. And along comes somebody from California who was in the venture business, who called up passing through Atlanta and had a few hours for lunch and called up. And I never met or heard of him, but he wound up coming by. And that was the beginning of Nora Mosley Partners, because he introduced me to his Dutch partner and friend. And after that, it was off to the races. And I wound up leaving Robinson Humphrey, which in the meanwhile was being sold to American Express. Mm-hmm. And the coincidence of that, if that German company had not canceled that meeting, I would have been busy that day. And this guy would have passed through the Atlanta airport and gone back to California, and I would have never met him.
Yeah.
So coincidence number two. Yes. Luck.
Very much so. And then can you tell us a little bit more about your position at Nora Mosley and kind of all about that?
Well, first thing I had to do, because it was just me to start with the help from the man in California, I raised the money for our first fund. Mm-hmm. And now, 40 years later, they have just finished raising money for the ninth fund. And so we had a long series of investing funds. And we've done a good job of surviving. You know, to be successful, the first thing you have to do is survive. Yeah. And surviving and doing well enough to attract more money each time we raise the funds. We started out investing mainly in Southeastern-based companies. And the Southeastern-based, that was because that's what we knew. And there wasn't much venture capital, hardly any, in the Southeast. So we thought our mission was to provide a local, that is Southeastern-based, venture fund that could invest in growing private companies. All of that sounds strange to anybody from California, because that was commonplace in California, but it wasn't in most of the rest of the country. Mm-hmm. So when we started, we were investing in practically anything that was a good company. We didn't have any industry expertise or industry interest at the time. If it was a good company that had a good record and we liked the people, we would make an investment. So we invested in all kinds of different things. Then as time went by and all of the partners at Norrell Mosley got more experience and reputation spread. The company has now moved to specializing in two particular things, healthcare companies and healthcare technology, and business services, particularly technology-oriented business services, software, computer services, et cetera. And that's been a good way. So you start out with one thing, and we wound up going where we could. Mm-hmm. And the investing process is one that the thing about the investing world is you find out exactly what the result of what you did was. There's no, in the end, you know the ones that worked and the ones that mm-hmm. didn't work, and you work as hard on the ones that didn't work as you do on the ones that did work. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a, there are no sure things. And some of the things that you think would be not doing well would get better and turn out to be really good investments. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a, there's no formula that we never figured out a formula that just says if all of these things are in place, this is going to work. It's more complicated.
Yeah. This is a little bit of a pivot, but can you talk about how you met Brenda and how you got married?
This is an appropriate conversation today. Along that way, I told you about Monroe High School and about growing up in that town. Well, the prettiest girl in the town was named Brenda, and she was always interested in people older than me. I was 1 year older, but she had no interest for a long time. So she went to Georgia, I went to Tech, and we kind of went our separate ways until after the first year there. And I think we both realized, I already knew it, she's pretty good, but maybe she realized he isn't so bad. So we started dating and wound up getting married shortly thereafter. And ironically, tomorrow, Catherine, is our 60th anniversary, if you can believe that. That's a long time.
Yes.
And so we've had a great marriage and just plain lucky, and had two children and now five grandchildren, one of whom is you.
Yep. What was it like passing this company down to your son eventually?
Well, that's interesting. He came to work and worked there for 10 years. And was really did a good job. And we had several people older than him who had been there longer before he arrived. So he had to sort of earn his spurs too. Mm-hmm. If you think about it that way, when I got to a point where I really was ready to move on and retire. Mm-hmm. And so I had a sort of a glide path, working a little less, a little less, a little less, et cetera. And we started out with one of the other partners there who was senior to Alan. And he ran it for a while and did a good job. And then it became apparent that Alan really was the person to do that. And so it wasn't like he was coronated by me. It was that he was the, sort of the natural choice as mm-hmm. it worked. And that works better. I also figured out, and this was pretty important, that it's hard to have two chiefs in the kitchen. So this was his time and his position, and I didn't really enjoy coming around and sitting and asking, looking, saying, what's going on? Why did you do this or whatever? So I really, when I left, I pretty much left, and it has worked well, and I don't think it's hard to do otherwise, I think. So it's lucky to have started something and have it work, and then have your son come in and continue, not only continue it, but doing a great job, doing a better job than I did. And once you get over the ego of that, you say, well, that's really the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah. Moving sort of back, can you tell us about how you got back into the board at Georgia Tech and what that has been like?
Well, I was always active and had, as time went by, we had the two most recent, not the last one, but the two before that, the two presidents of Georgia Tech, as they were serving at Tech, both became friends of mine and joined our board at Nora Mosley, as well as the president of Emory. So we always thought that it was good to have some academic connection, because venture capital is a world of, takes some intellect, let me just say it that way. And so that makes you think of colleges. So having had the first one on our board, got to know him well. And so they asked me to join the foundation board. And I worked on that for a number of years, and ultimately there was a system of kind of, you go from here to here to here, and wind up being the chairman of that board, which was a very fulfilling thing for me, because the purpose of the foundation is to raise money from donors, mainly Tech alums, and to use that money how the donor wanted it used, to promote the academic education of students at Tech, which I felt like was a really good thing. So it was very, very, I spent a lot of time on it, and it was very fulfilling.
Yeah. How did you join the board of Raven Gap?
Well, with our house up in the mountains, where you've been many times, it was sought. And since we go to a Presbyterian church in Atlanta, Raven Gap was a Presbyterian related school, private school up there in the mountains. So it would. That was the connection that I caught on to, and I served on that for many years, and my term would be up and I'd get off the board, and then they'd ask me to come back on the board, and I did that for about 25 or 30 years. And through several administrations, and when you're changing headmasters of schools or presidents of universities or presidents of companies, sometimes it doesn't work. And you thought somebody who was going to really be good turned out not to be so good. So we went through a couple of iterations of headmasters, but finally the last two or three have really been good, and the school has flourished and is really prospering. And the last guy has been interested in getting Raven Gap into sports.
Okay.
It wasn't before, and it kind of, you know, if you're trying to attract students to a private school, going to a private school that has no sports is not really a good way to do that.
Yeah.
Who wants to go there? So they've become much more oriented towards sports, football, basketball, field hockey, I think, and volley and soccer. And so the school, that's helped the school really prosper too.
Can you tell us about your world travels?
Well, I love to travel. And we just got back from our vacation in California, where we were with you. Had a great time up in Sonoma. And we've got, as soon as I got back, I started looking at travel things. Well, where are we going now? And so we're going to a cruise down the Columbia River that runs between Oregon and Washington up there, gigantic river. And we're doing that next summer. But we've been fortunate to be all over the world in various places. We went to China in 1985. We've been to Africa. We've been to practically everywhere except Southeast Asia. We've not been to Australia or Southeast Asia. But we like to travel. Brenda and I both enjoy it. We have friends who like to travel, and we are, it's something that's fun, and you learn a lot. And along the way, a lot of our investors started in Nora Mosley were from Holland. And so I would go to Holland every year to give an annual meeting on what we were doing and how things were going. So every time we would kind of branch out from there and sometimes go to France, sometimes Germany, looking around and got pretty familiar with Europe.
Do you have a favorite place you've been?
I'd say for me, Paris is about as good as it gets. You were there with us.
Yes, that was a lovely trip.
2 years ago, I guess. And I mean, it's a great city, but I've never been on a trip that wasn't good. Fun. They're just fun.
I'm so glad. You've exhausted all of my questions, but to wrap up, if you had one piece of advice for like people like trying to make decisions in their life, what would it be?
Well, this is not exactly that, but it's pretty close. I think as you go through life, you're always busy. A lot of things will hit you from different directions. You'll have a lot of different choices to make and where you're headed and what are you doing. And I think as you go through those, if you can keep some kind of foundation that will give you some stability and a little bit of a rock as you go through all of those things. And I would say that the three most important things to pay attention to are your family, your friends, and your faith. And those three things sort of transcend the details of a job or a career or this, that, because all of that will come. But what is important is to have those three things, family, faith, and friends, because that'll last you a long time.
Yes. That's such good advice. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, anything else?
Nope, that is it.
Let me know if I can do any more to help you.
Okay, thank you, Pops. I'll see you later. Bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's episode with Charles Mosley. If you did, similar content can be found on my page, and do not hesitate to reach out with any comments or questions. See you next time.